From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. For the rest of this hour, we turn to the study of the brain, a study of the brain that appears in the journal Science today. You know that feeling you get when you're sitting in the dentist's office waiting for a root canal? Or for me, it's a feeling of when I go into a waiting room and I know I'm going to have my blood drawn, I kind of, I don't want that to happen. Well, there's a new study that has identified the place in the brain where these feelings of dread originate, and it's not the part of the brain that involves fear of the unpleasant event. The discovery also suggests ways we may be able to get past that dread. The study's lead author joins me now to talk about his research and what it means for us when we're faced with dreadful situations. Gregory Burns is the author of Satisfaction, The Science of Finding True Fulfillment, and he's an associate professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. He joins me today from the campus there. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Burns.
Great to be here, Joe.
And if you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And as always, there's more information about this topic on our website, www.sciencefriday.com. And Gregory Burns, I can't resist sort of saying, I guess it's just not painful dread we're talking about here, but I'm sure some people have that feeling of dread when they know they have to appear on live radio, like Talk of the Nation.
Well, yeah, that's right. You just want to get it over with, I suppose.
I hope that's not the case with you, at least.
Not at all.
Okay.
Love to
so,
be here.
So what were you looking for here? How do you study something as vague as this feeling we have called dread?
Well, yeah, the thing about dread is, like you said, it seems to be very vague. It seems to be this kind of emotion that floats there and makes you do things that seem a little bit irrational. And the way you approach this problem is you basically look into the brain. And the study that we did is actually part of a growing field in neuroeconomics. And what neuroeconomics is like the name sounds, it's the merging of neuroscience methods with problems that economists typically study.
And,
now you may think that...
Yeah, I was just going to say, the economy of dread...
Well, yeah, exactly. So dread doesn't really sound like a problem that economists would be interested in, but in fact, it is really a very interesting problem, and it impacts our decisions because, as you point out, when you're doing things or when you're waiting for things that you know are unpleasant, the feeling of dread can sometimes be so overpowering that the waiting is the worst part, and you may actually end up doing things that you might not do otherwise. So, for example... In our study, we were studying the effect of pain and how that causes the feeling of dread. And one thing that's very peculiar about pain is obviously you want to get rid of the shock as quickly as possible in terms of how the voltage is. So basically what we did was we had participants undergoing brain imaging. And what we did was we wired up their feet with a little electrode, and we administered small electric shocks. Now, nobody likes these electric shocks, and what we are interested in is what it's like to wait for them. And so this is exactly the phenomena that you described, sitting there in the doctor's office or waiting for the dentist to come in. You just want the thing over with.
Right.
Now, some people really hate this, and basically what they're telling us is, you know, I really hate waiting, and, you know, I would actually rather take a larger shock than wait any further for this.
So what you're doing, I guess the reason you're putting them in this brain imager is you're trying to find out what parts of the brain seem to be turned on or active or what when this feeling is experienced.
Well, we want to know two things. The first thing is we want to understand what dread is, and like you pointed out, it's very hard to know that simply by asking people because it's a vague emotion. So by using brain imaging, we can understand what dread is by where in the brain it manifests itself. So the way we did that is we focus on a network of areas known as the pain matrix because, after all, people in this case are waiting for something painful. Now, pain is interesting because it's not something that's just a matter of hurting. I mean, pain is actually comprised of things like how hard a person is stimulated, whether it's scratching or whether it's a burn, how hot or how hard these things affect you. But it's also affected by things like attention. and by things like emotion. And all of these things augment or increase the amount of pain that a person experiences. Now, we can map these different functions onto parts of the brain, and by looking at what happens in these different parts of the brain while a person is waiting for something unpleasant, we can see what aspect of this phenomena, whether it's attention or emotion or something else, that gives rise to dread.
And the punchline?
Well, the punchline is that dread is not something as simple as fear or anxiety, as you might think. It actually has a lot to do with the attention that you devote to the part of the body that's about to be hurt. And the way we know that is because in the group of people we studied, there were basically mild versions of it, and there were extreme versions of it. And these extreme dreaders, as we call them, were people who couldn't stand to wait so much that they just were willing to take actually a more painful shock rather than wait for a less painful one, which is, on the surface, quite illogical.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, that's an interesting set of circumstances, and we have a lot of people waiting to ask questions about it, so let's take a call now and go first to Landon in Oklahoma City. Landon, welcome to Science Friday. Hello?
I was just wondering if you noticed a similar phenomenon, I guess, in situations where people are anticipating things that are happy rather than things that they're not looking forward to.
So sort of the flip side of dread, you would say?
Yes.
Okay. Gregory Burns, is there something in that, or is that not your study?
Well, it's not our study, although that phenomena you might appropriately call savoring. So a good example of that would be a fine meal, where you would want to make it last as long as possible, perhaps. And we didn't study that because it's actually a little bit difficult to make people experience pleasurable things in the scanner. It's much easier to make them feel unpleasant things.
I see. Landon, thanks for that call. Let's take another call now and go to Robert in Waco, Texas. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Your question, you're on the air.
My question is, as far as a fear of flying, I had a bad experience on a near crash landing on a plane, and ever since then I have not flown again. The feeling that I get as I get to an airport falls more under dread and sort of waiting for turbulence to happen. It's not like I think the plane's going to go down. It's just I'm sort of dreading that whole experience.
And let me just say, just to be clear here, when you get on the plane, are you still white-knuckle flyer, or is it you're okay once you're doing it?
No, still white-knuckle flyer.
Okay, so there's dread and anticipation and then at least fear during. What would you say about that, Gregory Burns?
Well, those are a combination of emotions, I think, going on, and it's a really good example of how feelings of dread and anxiety make us do things that we really think are illogical, because I'm assuming that you have to fly or you would like to fly places rather than drive.
I'd like to fly, but the last time I tried, I purchased the tickets and then ended up having to cancel it because I could not bring myself to get on the plane.
Wow.
Yes, that sounds like a pretty severe case of dread and anxiety. Now, what our findings suggest about that is one of the key aspects of dread that I don't think we fully appreciated before was the effect of attention. So one of the things that I think can be helpful in these circumstances is distraction. Because when you're sitting there in the airport or whether you're driving to the airport, I mean, you're really only thinking about one thing, and that is getting on the plane. And we can assume that if you distract yourself, or at least try to distract yourself, it will probably decrease the dread.
Well, I've found that if I take music with me or something else to listen to for the length of the flight, and I sort of gauge that this is a two-hour flight, so I need 2 hours of music, I use that as sort of a helpful distraction. And I also use different homeopathy remedies to sort of calm that anxiety.
Well, Robert, it's an interesting problem, but I like this idea, Greg Burns, and thanks for your call, Robert. I like this idea of distraction, but at some point, your attention tends to wander back to the thing you're dreading.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, the thing that you're dreading ultimately does approach, and the issue is, you know, how much can you take your mind off of it?
Okay. Let's take another call to take our mind off of this. No, I'm just kidding. And go to Mark in, is it Truckee? Truckee, California?
Hi, yes.
Mark,
I had a
welcome.
Question. I had read a book, Poe's Heart and the Mountain Climber, where it talks specifically about fear and anxiety and the difference. And you're talking today about pain and dread. And I was wondering if you could elaborate more on are these the same thing, just looked at different angles, or are they very specifically different, anxiety versus dread, fear versus pain? They seem kind of different sides of the same thing.
Hmm. That's an excellent question, and I get asked this a lot. Now, I just try to imagine what this experiment is like. So we have people lying on their back in an MRI scanner, and we have electrodes on their foot. And they've already experienced it because we gave them test shocks. And basically what it feels like is a sharp needle jab. Now, what's actually happening is we give them a signal at the beginning of each trial that says you have to wait anywhere from, say, 1 second to almost 30 seconds. Now, I think what's happening, and I can vouch for this having done the experiment myself, is that it's not so much the fear of the pain in this case, it's just that you just can't stand waiting for it. And it's the waiting itself is that's the thing that people want to avoid. And that's, I think, what we're talking about here with dread. Because people aren't afraid of the pain, per se. It's more like they're afraid of the waiting. And it's the case that you build these things up in your mind that are so much greater than the actual event itself that the shock or the pain actually provides relief from dread. So I think it is a little bit different than fear or anxiety because the people aren't afraid, and they're not really even anxious, I think, by the same kind of definition. It's really almost oh my God, do I have to wait for this thing? Just get it over with. And that's a little bit different.
That clear, Mark?
Yes, it is. And if I understand, then the person going to get, say, a shot, the dread would occur when they actually sit down in the chair, whereas the anxiety is more about going to the doctor in general. Is that correct?
It could be both. I think what we noticed in this experiment is that a piece of information, and it's hard to know because we're being bombarded with things like this, but it was actually the information that we gave to the person that said, you're going to be shocked and you have to wait this long, which is what triggers this dread response. So the example of the doctor is there could be several phases where you experience dread. One is when you make the appointment, one is when you get in the car, and then one is when you're sitting in the office. And kind of each one of these gives like a little bump in your dread response.
Interesting. Mark, thanks for that call. And we're talking with Gregory Burns, who's performed this really interesting experiment that attempts to get at where in the brain this feeling that we're all familiar with called dread comes from. I'm Joe Palka, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Dr. Burns, I want to ask a question that's always bothered me, and that is this notion that, well, tell me first of all, what exactly, when these people get into these brain scanners, what's being measured in this scan?
That's an excellent question, Joe. Basically, what we're doing is taking movies of the brain, and what the measurement itself is actually blood flow. It turns out that the brain is kind of like a muscle, that when certain parts are being used, they recruit more blood to it because they're using oxygen and their metabolism is increasing, and so they need more blood. And that is, in fact, what we're measuring.
I see. But so just to follow that example, the thing that's always bothered me is if you say, okay, a muscle needs more energy, well, you can see that because someone runs or they lift weights or something like that. But it seems to me that there's a leap of faith to say, okay, this brain muscle is doing something, but what it's related to may be dread, or it may be, you know, when you experience these feelings of dread, you simultaneously experience feelings of ennui in another, you know, something like that. And so it seems to me very hard to know what these extra blood flow in this particular case actually signifies.
Yes, I mean, that's what one thing we've learned about the brain is that if you have a pet emotion, whether it's dread or fear or love or happiness, it's almost certainly the case that you can't point to one single region and say, aha, that's the part of the brain that does that. So one thing that we've learned is that all of these functions, whether they're things like attention or emotions, are generally accomplished by a network of regions. And so since these are networks, they can be kind of put together in different ways to accomplish the functions. Now, I think we've gotten more sophisticated with brain imaging these days, and it's not simply that we're just saying, well, this part of the brain is more active or it's not. In fact, what we did was actually looked at the time course of that activity and its relationship to the specific events in our experiment. And we have some theory to go on here, actually is economic theory, strangely enough, that there are a few theories out there that predict what happens while people are waiting for things. And it's quite perverse because waiting is not really an event. It's just a state of mind.
Right.
And so we were specifically looking for patterns of activity that followed a particular time course, namely one that was highest when we presented the cue that said you have to wait, and then actually declined as the shock approached. So this is different than anxiety because anxiety would be expected to grow as the shock approached in time. But dread is something different because you can actually see it in people when they're doing this, is that when they get shocked, they actually breathe a sigh of relief. And it's the relief from the dread.
Well, I don't know, Dr. Burns, if you felt dread by appearing on this program, but I can now tell you that I'm relieving you of the dread because I'm afraid we've run out of time. But thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Gregory Burns is the author of Satisfaction, The Science of Finding True Fulfillment, and an associate professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Kimberly Jones is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Neil Rausch and Manoli Wetherill in New York, and Linda Mack and Kevin Waite in Washington. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarians Key Molesky and Alphonse Vinn. If you have questions or comments, write to us at Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. Or you can send an email. That address is scifry@npr.org. Check out sciencefriday.com for more information and links to today's program. You can listen to past editions of Science Friday online or take them with you as a podcast. And check out Science Friday's Kids Connection, free curriculum materials for teaching science using Science Friday. Just click on the teacher's link on sciencefriday.com. Ira Flatow will be back next week for NPR News in Washington. I'm Joe Palca.